Good evening, brethren. There are some people here who have spent much more time in Israel than I did, and therefore they will know much more about Israel than I do. And is Rowena here? She probably is the most experienced, I think, of all those who have been to Israel. But Brother Alan Springer has been there. Ray and Susan have been there. Who else has been there? Yes, Freya. So look, the information I was given was usually prefaced by, this is the traditional site. So there's a lot of uncertainty in the guide's mind as to what's what. And so if you have information which corrects what I say, please speak up. The purpose is get it right rather than get it wrong. I've put a map up on the screen. I don't know how familiar you are with the geography of Israel, so I think it might be worthwhile spending a couple of minutes just to give you where we went. So I'm going to walk over there, and I haven't got a pointer, but I'll get some ideas. We flew into Tel Aviv, which is about the middle of the map. And then we flew into Tel Aviv, which is about there. And the first night, we walked down the coast to Joppa, along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. Wow, that was an experience. The next day, we went from Joppa, further up here by bus, to Mount Carmel. And then from Mount Carmel, across to Nazareth, which is about here, in round figures. From Nazareth, across to Tiberias, on the Sea of Galilee. From the Sea of Galilee, we had a boat trip. On the Sea of Galilee, around to Capernaum, which is just about here. From Capernaum, a bus trip further north, heading up towards Mount Hermon. We got about 35 kilometres from the Syrian border, which was the day that there had been an uprising in the southernmost city of Siberia. And our guide said, we are not going any further. Sorry? No, Syria, sorry. Yeah, Syria. He said, we aren't going any further because the road was a single lane bitumen road. But I mean single lane, not two lanes, just one single road, single lane. We're in a bus. He said, there is no place for us to turn around between here and the Syrian border. So just in case things erupt any further, we aren't going any further, and we came back home. So from up about there, we came back down around the Sea of Galilee, down to the bottom of the Sea of Galilee, and then right down the Jordan Valley, right down here. And this is the West Bank here, of course, and we had the West Bank on one side and Jordan on the other side. And the difference between the two border fences would be about probably 25 or 30 yards. Not much wider than this room, I would say. Perhaps a bit more, but about that. And each side had a barbed wire fence, two barbed wire fences. The two barbed wire fences were about 10 or 15 feet apart. And the guide said, don't walk between the fences because they are all landmined. Landmined both sides of the Jordan Valley. But a beautiful highway down here. I said to the guide, who built the highway? We did. We being Israel. Now Jericho is about here. We couldn't go to Jericho because Jericho is in the West Bank and the Palestinians wouldn't give us permission to go into Jericho. So we came down here to Jerusalem. From Jerusalem down here, about 3 miles south-southeast, to Bethlehem. Back to Bethlehem, out to Emmaus, which is about here. And then from there, back to Jerusalem, a couple of days in Jerusalem, and then across here and down into the Judean desert, down the Dead Sea, to where the Dead Sea Scrolls were supposedly found, and further down to Masada, if you are aware of Masada, and then back to Jerusalem and home. Okay? Just to give you one little idea of what Israel's all about, we flew El Al, that's the Israeli airline, from New York to Tel Aviv. El Al interview every passenger individually. I had flown from the west coast of America, from the BSRC in Portland, Oregon, and they had checked my luggage right through to Tel Aviv. So I arrived at New York to board this flight to go to Tel Aviv with no luggage. And that was unacceptable. Where is your luggage? And this little girl, about so high, she grilled me for quite a few minutes about my luggage. She wouldn't take my explanation. She ended up going away and checking with the airline that in fact my luggage was already booked in on the flight to go to Tel Aviv. So that gives you some idea of the security that which LL Airlines apply to their passengers. As well as that, it was quite a nice entry for you. So I took a photograph with the flashlight on. And in about half a second flat, this guy rushed over and said, "Where's the camera? Where's the camera?" And he took the camera out of my hand and turned it around and deleted the photograph. He said, "No photographs here, buddy." Another indication of how secure LL regard their whole environment. Yeah. Okay. So now where we go. Here we are. So my first photograph then is at Tel Aviv Airport, and that's just the photograph of all the tourist buses which were lined up for the numerous tour groups going around Israel. And the buses were just like they are here, you know, massive big things, diesel powered, all that sort of stuff. That was our hotel in Tel Aviv, 5-star, beautiful. We'll keep moving. And then we went from Tel Aviv, as I showed you on the map, north to Caesarea. Now there's two Caesareas, the Caesarea Philippi, which is inland, and Caesarea Maritima on the coast. And this is supposedly the place where the Apostle Paul sailed, from which he sailed to Rome. Okay? And the excavation is going on there, which gives you some idea of how old it is. And that there is what used to be an amphitheatre. And one of our brethren stood in the bottom of the amphitheatre and spoke. I was right at the top. I heard every word. The acoustics were fantastic. No PA system, no microphones. Then another little excavation near that is Herod's Temple. Herod's Theatre, rather. But that was actually the name of the place where we were. It was all one big complex. So it was Herod's Theatre. Also in Caesarea is this building with this structure, an aqueduct, supposedly built in Roman times. The gradient on the aqueduct was 1 inch per mile, without computers or whatever else to build the thing. And certainly there are breaks in it now, but supposedly, you know, 1,000 years old or so. So the Roman engineering was just absolutely amazing. Then we kept driving across now, going across towards Nazareth. Sorry, across towards Mount Carmel. And that is a mountain. And what is the traditional site? Well, I give you lots of explanations of what it might be. One of them said that was the Mount of Temptation. But he said, that's the traditional site. Now whether that is true or not, I don't know. Does anyone know more about that mountain between Caesarea and Nazareth? Any idea? Okay. We kept going across to Mount Carmel. Now Mount Carmel, as you probably all remember, from 1 Kings chapter 18, is where Elijah slew the 450 prophets of Baal. And that was the signboard going up to the top of Mount Carmel. The signboard is in three languages, English, Hebrew and Arabic. And I think all of the road signs I saw were in three languages, English, Hebrew and Arabic. That's the view from the top of Mount Carmel, looking west, and the valley down there is supposedly the Valley of Megiddo, which we had a moment of truth about it. For me, it was quite somber to stand there and think that is the Valley of Megiddo. Oh, that's just a shot from the top of Mount Carmel. You know, the rocks and so on were pretty rough and rugged, and people needed to be fairly fit to cope with the walking. On the way across to Nazareth, we went past this little tomb on the side of the road, and you can see there the rolling stone and so on, but it's not the tomb where Jesus is supposed to have been placed, but it's just an illustration of what his tomb might have been like before it was developed commercially. Another view, as we go from Nazareth across towards Tiberias now on the Sea of Galilee, and that's just to show some of the agricultural achievements of the Israelis. They are absolutely miraculous. I'll show you some photographs in a moment of the virgin country. But agriculturally, there were hundreds of yards or metres of drip irrigation system in those paddocks, just to conserve the water. The way they do it is just amazing. That is supposed to be the city of Nazareth. Whether it is or whether it's not, the guy wasn't quite sure, because there's two towns very close together, Nazareth and something else, and I can't recall the name of it. But anyway, just shows you what it might be like. We got to Tiberias on the Sea of Galilee, and that's the hotel there. Once again, a 5-star accommodation. Costs in Israel are very expensive. If you were there as a private citizen, the hotels that we were in, for a single room, which I had, was $275 per night. Bed, breakfast and dinner included. And there is the boat on the Sea of Galilee. Of all the other places, they say this is the traditional site. They aren't sure whether it wasn't. At least the Sea of Galilee is the Sea of Galilee. And so that was authentic. That was a very moving experience for me. Unfortunately, the tour was just a custom tour which the company called Tour Host International provide, and the Bible students just booked a whole tour for us. And so we went along with the traditional tour activities. And being on a boat on the water, they had to turn on modern Israeli music, which just destroyed the atmosphere completely, as far as I was concerned. But the boat trip from Tiberias up to Capernaum took about 45-50 minutes, and it was really a very nice experience, except for the Israeli modern-day music. And that's approaching Capernaum, as we go into Capernaum. You can see the modern hotel, but the archaic waterfront. On the boat, just before we got to Capernaum, they had both the American flag and the Israeli flag on the boat just to please the Americans. But unfortunately, the wind caught the Israeli flag at the wrong moment and the stuff didn't come out. Now from Capernaum, we kept going north up the coast of the Sea of Galilee, and that supposedly is the Mount of Beatitudes or the Mount of Temptation, and they weren't sure which. And the guide said, "I'm not sure which." I thought, "I don't know what that one is." Alan, you have any idea? No. At Capernaum also is this boat, which they claim could be a boat very much like the boat on which Jesus actually sailed on the Sea of Galilee. Supposedly they found it on the bottom of the Sea of Galilee. All their scientific measurements indicate that it might be 2,000 years old. There's a whole spiel about how they got the thing up. Very complex scientific procedure to get this boat up from the bottom of the sea. But whether it is the actual boat, I don't know. But of course, it's there for tourism, because the Israeli economy benefits greatly from tourism. I don't remember the exact figure, but I think it's about 8% of GDP comes from tourism. Once again, you see the languages, English, Hebrew and Arabic. Now we're driving up from Capernaum up towards Mount Hermon in the north. And that's sort of the country, which was quite typical of the country in that area. If I was a farmer, I wouldn't give them two bob for it, frankly. But that's what the Israelis claim as their land, and they develop it, and it's very precious to them. I think that's all it. Yeah, okay. That's as far north as we went, which was right at the very top, 35 kilometres from the Syrian border. And now there's something momentous about that place. Can you recall what it is? No, that's down further. That's coming up. Okay. But there's something significant about that place. It's just, you know, the Jordan actually rises at the foot of Mount Hermon. And the scriptures refer to the dew of Hermon, which the guide explained was a continuous water supply because Hermon was so high and there's always water. And there's still snow on Mount Hermon, even though it was at the end of summer. So I'll say again, that's all I know about it. But that is the River Jordan. I think that's the one. Oh, here we are. Right, yeah. Now, this place here is at the northern end of the Sea of Galilee, and it's supposed to be some place where the heathens used to sacrifice children. I don't know much about it myself, so I didn't quite capture either. Some parts of the tour were too fast for me to comprehend, so I missed out. This picture is just to show what a millstone might be like. And this millstone apparently was used to crush olives. That's the size of a millstone. So in Revelation, when they cast the millstone, chuck him into the water, well, you won't come back in a hurry, that's for sure. That's another one. This one is a donkey-powered mill, and that one was supposed to be used for crushing grain. And you can just see Mount Hermon there with the snow on top, right at the very top. Okay, and you see the agriculture there, Israeli agriculture. Now we're travelling back down, come back from the northernmost point, coming back down into, it was approaching Capernaum again. That's just to show you some of the road development that the Israelis have done. They have been there less than 63 years, you know, and their roads and their technology is absolutely first class, magnificent. They drive on the right-hand side of the road, like the Americans do, so no drama, it's quite good. And the signboard outside the town of Capernaum. Is that spelling the way it was spelt in New Testament times? I don't know. I wasn't there. Statue of King David. Two of the things which fascinated me about the mentality of the Israelis is that they cling very strongly to Abraham being their father. And this is both Orthodox Jew and non-Orthodox Jew and Christian Jew. They all unashamedly claimed Abraham to be their father. And they also unashamedly claimed David to be their king. And there were several statues of David around Israel. That's another millstone. I'm not too sure what that's for, but it was crushing something or other. Another is the size of it. And now we've gone up the top of that mountain, which they thought was the Mount of Temptation, and looking down, and the story was, you know, you can imagine Jesus being here and being shown the world below him and the temptation that he faced to bow down and worship the devil. Whether that is actually the Mount of Temptation, I don't know, but that's what we were told. Now we're coming down the western side of the Sea of Galilee, right at the bottom, and we now come to the commercial baptismal site on the Jordan River. And if Rowena is here, is this the place, Rowena? Where is she? Yes. Is that the place? You don't? Okay. Okay. This is a very moving experience as well, because each along the side of the river, they have little places where groups can gather and have their own little baptismal service before they have the immersion. And it's quite challenging, really, because there were several groups there. I happened to capture a moment there when there was no one else, but there were several groups there singing in different languages, but if I'm correct, they were singing the same tune as some of our baptismal hymns. Yeah. Makes you think. Outside that site, there are 13 different plaques in 13 different languages, all having the same text about baptism, John coming to baptize Jesus in Jordan. 13 different languages, 13 plaques. So it makes you think, or made me think anyway, you know, who are we? Do we claim to have the truth? Are we the only ones with the truth? Now we're on the road again, coming down, well, just left the bottom of the Sea of Galilee, going down the Jordan Valley. And that's looking across into the West Bank. And you can see it's pretty rough country. And there, there we are. That's right, yes, there are those barbed wire fences I was talking about. Just, here. Yeah, here. Barbed wire fences. And there's two fences there, and in the middle is landmines.
Okay.
Taken from the bus, of course, and so it's in the stop, that's why I flew. But, yeah, it was quite interesting. It was about 2.5 hours' drive, and you wonder, well, hopefully there's no landmines going off today. Yeah. West Bank on one side and Jordan on the other. And that's just a sentry box that's on the West Bank side, that's the western side of the Jordan Valley. As we came down the Jordan Valley, our bus driver knew some people who actually had access to a synagogue on the way down, and so he was able to arrange us to have access to a Jewish synagogue. And unfortunately, these next three or four slides are not in sequence, but that's inside this modern-day Jewish synagogue. And that is the high altar, I think, in the synagogue. And that is he was the bus driver who was able to arrange access, and he's holding out a copy of the Torah in scroll form, written from right to left. As you can see there, there's a copy, a close-up of the Torah, so if you can read Hebrew, you can go for it. But each Sabbath day, they read from the Torah. So they still do that every Sabbath day. That's him in his prayer gown. Before he could actually go to stand where he is now, he had to put on his prayer shawl. And around his left hand is a ribbon, which goes around a certain number of times. I don't know the exact number of times, but he had to have that on his hand before he was prepared to go and stand where he is currently standing. The practice in the synagogue is still to segregate the men from the women. And only the men go into the main area of the synagogue, and all of the women are channeled upstairs, up a stairway, into the upper part of the synagogue. They don't go down with the men at all today. And that's just a view of the outside of the synagogue. I didn't know we were going to have time, but anyway, that's the external view of the synagogue from the outside. Quite modern, as you can see. But even though it's modern, they still adhere to Old Testament tradition in the synagogue. And that was across the road from the synagogue. Rough country, house, and here, just there, is a bomb shelter. And every house in the country has its own bomb shelter. And we didn't stop any, so I couldn't get any photographs, but we were told, and you could see chunks of holes in the concrete that had been coming out, just as if they'd been hit by some sort of shell or bullet or something, right? But they have these bomb shelters for protection. And that's a close-up of his bomb shelter concealed under the tree. Gives you sort of an eerie feeling, you know, to realise that. And there's another view further back. You can see how the bomb shelter is more concealed, tucked away on the side. That was the house. These people live in a kibbutz, on the outskirts of a kibbutz, a flat roof. But see, he's got a satellite antenna there and a TV aerial. And they took us in and gave us a meal, or not a snack anyway. And alongside that, he was the owner, and he's mowing his grass with a motor mower, and he had a little diesel tractor. So in one respect they've got all the mod cons, in another respect, you know, there's parts of it still very, very ancient. And I said to the guide, I'm really challenged by the great diversity of development that occurred, that's in Israel. And he said, oh, give us a break, we've only been here 63 years. Yeah. That's just a photo of his farm shed. And they were the people who lived in the house. The girl in the middle is a Filipino who's working there for experience. She's got some qualification or other. The lady on your right-hand side, the mother, she's very old, well over 80. She's older. Present company accepted. I was fascinated by their cultural development. You'll see on your left-hand side there's a microwave oven and a hot water urn and an electric juicer-type gadget. Behind the lady on the right-hand side, they had an electric stove. They got electric power in there in the late 1950s, which was only about 10 years after they got nationhood. So it was remarkably quick. The house itself, flat roof, lino on the floor, but up the stairway to the top story, and the stairway was just uncovered raw concrete with no guardrail. Coming down the Jordan Valley further towards Jerusalem, and this is on, there's a place about, I don't know, 20 or 30 kilometres north of Jerusalem where the West Bank is wider than other places. And this is the wider place, and the Israelis are in here farming it. And you can see there lush vegetation, and that covering there is, they use a lot of hydroponic technique, and there's acres and acres, not just in this area, but other areas as well, covered over with plastic sheeting to conserve the moisture. They really are absolute wizards. And just keep that in mind, because when we come down to see the Judean desert in a moment, you'll just get the contrast. Now, Beit She'an. Who knows about Beit She'an? Because I have searched and searched. I have found it in the scriptures, but I don't know, I can't recall the significance of Beit She'an. Any idea? No, okay, let's press on. But there at Beit She'an was this another amphitheatre or theatre or whatever, and you see there it's in rather poor state of repair, but I don't remember the sequence of it, or significance of it, sorry, so sorry about that. And then we arrive at Jerusalem, and that is our hotel in Jerusalem. Once again, 5-star hotel we had, lovely accommodation. Outside the hotel, I couldn't recall what I'd taken and what I hadn't taken, so just a photograph of the traffic sign. You know, once again, three languages, English, Hebrew and Arabic, and vehicles from both sides, little diagrams and so on. Just to show me that's modern day. And it was a Dan Panorama Hotel in Jerusalem. Just to show you their modern transport system in Jerusalem, so double-decker, well, we call them omnibuses in Canberra, articulated vehicle, beautiful machine. There is it 1.7 million people in Jerusalem? I think that's right, 1.7 million. And they are just commissioning their first light rail system in Jerusalem. They had it installed, they were still testing it, and I didn't get a chance to get a photograph. But the light rail system, of course, with no driver, all automatic, will go from station to station, not just around the airport or whatever, from suburb to suburb, with no driver, all electronic. But it wasn't quite commissioned. So the technology, you know, they're sharp, they're right there with the world leaders. But they probably are the world leader. That's the dining room inside our hotel in Jerusalem. I think it sat 450 people, and for two of our meals they had to put us downstairs in the one downstairs because this one was full. Some of the people on tour got some photographs of the actual food that was provided, and absolutely, it was just delicious. And I knew that Israel was good for citrus fruit. Well, to taste an Israeli orange in season, it was just
Well, our oranges are sour compared with that. It was just absolutely wonderful, glorious. Needless to say, someone ate far more than they should have. Now we're going west from Jerusalem, out towards Emmaus, and this was just an attempt to get a shot of a petrol station. Well, how they handle their fuel for vehicles. Anyway, the camera was slow getting started, and I was slow getting started, and so I missed the whole thing. But you can see, you know, the fuel stations, as they are in Australia, really. The price of fuel, I think there's a... No, not there, okay. So the price of fuel, though, if I recall correctly, was about $7 per gallon, so that's about $1.50, $1.60 Australian per litre, roughly. And this is Jerusalem. The tour did it extremely well. They put on that disc, you know, the song, the hymn, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem." And just when we came over the brow of the hill and saw Jerusalem, that song reached its climax on the bus PA. So it was very, very, very well done. More of Jerusalem. And you can see there the Mosque of Omar, the gold dome. And you can see the wall there, the brown wall. Jerusalem's in two, the city of Jerusalem itself's in two parts, the old city and the new city. And modern day Jerusalem embraces both, but the old city is still quite separate and sacred. Oh yeah, it's just a bus sign. Once again, Hebrew, Arabic and English. We drove in the bus from Jerusalem south, 3 miles to Bethlehem. Now Bethlehem is in the West Bank, under Palestinian control, even though it's only 3 miles south of Jerusalem. And they were she was one of the guides on guard duty on the border getting into Bethlehem. Unfortunately, she turned away from me just at the moment to take a photograph. I was inside the bus, so it didn't get very clear. That is a view from the bus. Sorry? Oh yes, yes, yes. Lots of armoured personnel around. Armed personnel, yeah. That just shows the wall between Israel and the Palestinians in the region of Bethlehem. On that point, the atmosphere is very different. In Israel, Palestinians live as free as a breeze. The first night, as I said to you, we walked from Jerusalem, from Tel Aviv, along the coast down to Joppa, 3 miles. Now, we got there on a Friday night. And Saturday night. So Friday is the Islamic holiday, yeah, okay. Saturday is the Jewish Sabbath. And Sunday is Christian day of rest, right? So it's a 3-day weekend, if you like. We got there on Saturday night, which was the Jewish Sabbath. So all the Jews were off the streets. But the Palestinians were out there enjoying themselves, you know, having a really good time because there was no Jews around and, hey, we're all fine. We said to the guide, would it be safe for us to walk down to Joppa for miles? And he said, oh, yeah, it's okay, provide you stay in the room 6 or so. So, 6 days, souls, off, and we walked down to Joppa.